The great thing about moving away is that we've been forced to streamline and systematize all of our processes. And doing that has made self-managing so much easier. I was so afraid to move away, but owning real estate in another state is so freeing, and it's a lot easier than I thought. So if that's anyone's hangups, if you're listening, don't be afraid to invest out of state. It really forces you to be an efficient property manager and owner of real estate.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Rachel is the best-selling author of Money Honey and Passive Income Aggressive Retirement. She built a real estate portfolio of 38 units by the age of 26. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Hey, pleasure's mine. Three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. 90 seconds or less. Where'd you start? Where are you now? How'd you get there?
I started my real estate investing journey in 2017. My husband and I purchased our first duplex that year. And within 2 years, we scaled our real estate portfolio from zero to 38 units. When people hear that, they make some assumptions. So I'll get those out of the way. I'm not a trust fund baby, and I never made six figures from a job or career. So let's see, where am I at now? I am now investing in syndications. I've invested in 8 syndications as LP, as a passive investor. And I'm now financially independent and living off $20,000 per month in passive income.
Wow, that is really cool. Congratulations, and a job well done. Zero to 38 units in over how many months was that?
24.
24 months. Okay. So you're buying a property, well, actually more than 1.5 properties a month.
It was 6 buildings, 38 doors.
6 buildings, 38 doors. That helps. So you're not doing 1.5 transactions every single month. Got it. 6 buildings, 38 doors. That's cool. Absolutely love it. Is this all, you're based in Denver, Colorado. Is this all in Denver?
This was all in Kentucky, where I lived for 20 years.
Okay, cool. So you had some experience, obviously, in the local market there. What did you do, to identify that many assets in that short of a time? What were you doing to do that?
I've always been a finance nerd and my whole life, proud of it. And I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad in high school. After college, I was a financial advisor. I also took a couple jobs working with a real estate investor and learning from him, and then working under a realtor. So I did have some experience in the industry, and I read every book I could get my hands on. One of my favorite ones is this book called Hold by Steve Chater. That one was really helpful learning how to analyze properties. One of the important things I think for people to do right now is look for off-market deals, because the market is so intense. The MLS is saturated and competitive, and it's really difficult to find good deals if all you're doing is looking at the MLS. One of the ways we found our first duplex was pretty much an off-market deal. So we looked at the withdrawn and canceled and expired listings on the MLS. And I was reaching out to those list agents to find out what happened. You know, why did the seller take it off the market? Did they change their mind? Is it going to come back up? And I remember feeling like I was pestering this one list agent about this duplex for months, but really I was just trying to be polite and stay top of mind. And when the seller was going to relist it, she reached out to me first and she said, hey, this is about to come back on the market. Would you like to make an offer? Which was really beneficial because I could make my offer before anyone else did. Right. And that is how we got that first duplex.
Wow. That's cool. Now, did you self-manage these, or do you self-manage these, or these you plug in the property management company? How'd you handle that?
We self-managed until we got to about 26 units, I think. And here's the thing. My husband and I were working full-time. So we were working 40 to 50 hours a week. I was writing my book in the evening, and we were acquiring and managing our rental properties on our own on the weekends and everything. So once we got to 26 units, we were like, we definitely need a property manager. And we've made our share of mistakes hiring property managers as well. But now to this day, we're back to self-managing.
Okay. That's interesting, because you at some point, you're right, you need that outside help, but it sounds like there were some mistakes made along the way where that help wasn't so very helpful.
Absolutely. This is our biggest mistake to date. My mistake is that I tend to be too cheap, and being cheap can cost you a lot more money in the long run. This is not the place to cut corners when you hire people like contractors and property managers. You don't cut corners here. So what we did is we were looking for a property management company, and they charge you anywhere from 10 to 12%. And we had this couple that was working for us doing things like maintenance, lawn care. They were so hardworking, some of the hardest working people we'd met, and they always went above and beyond. So we figured, let's make them employees of our company and they can be our property managers. Mm-hmm. We can save some money and be a little more hands-on in the way that we are training them and managing them to manage our properties. Felt like a win-win, right? It was not a win-win. It was a win-lose. So everything started off great. And then about 6 months in, my husband went to pick up rent from the on-site lockboxes one weekend, and he noticed a lot of rent was missing. And it was not just the normal tenant or two paying late. It was a significant amount. So come to find out, this couple had stolen $6,000 in rent that weekend. And we found out they had been squatting in vacant rooms and units in our properties for almost a year.
Wow.
Devastating. Yeah. It was one of those occurrences where I was like, we should quit. This is not meant for us. This is awful. And that lasted for a few days and I got over it. But it was devastating and such a violation of trust. And the moral of the story is that, again, this is not the place to be cheap. You need to hire a licensed, insured, properly permitted, you know, everything, reputable property management company. Because if we had done that and one of their employees had stolen rent from us, they would have been liable for the damages, not us.
Right.
So it's embarrassing to share because in retrospect, it seems so obvious. It's so naive of us to have done that. But I share it in the hopes that others will learn from my mistake.
Yeah, no, thank you for taking the time to share that. That is painful. I mean, I'm curious. You said your husband had gone to pick up rent from the on-site lockboxes. Now, you live in Denver and these properties are in Kentucky. So were you flying back to go pick up rent monthly?
No, we were still living there at the time. So we only moved to Denver a couple of years ago.
Got it. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really intense.
Yeah, no, we're not quite that dedicated. But the great thing about moving away is that we've been forced to streamline and systematize all of our processes. And doing that has made self-managing so much easier. I was so afraid to move away, but owning real estate in another state is so freeing and it's a lot easier than I thought. So if that's anyone's hangups, if you're listening, don't be afraid to invest out of state. It really forces you to be an efficient property manager and owner of real estate.
You know, I've heard that. And do I own anything? I own stuff that's 4 hours away. So it's, you know, I guess that's, I mean, obviously involved as a general partner on deals that are much further away than that. So I get it. Yes. I'm trying to remember what that state where you're mentioning, where a lot of people may be hearing this and going, gosh, I can't quite wrap my head around it. But it does all the things you just mentioned. Where it's like, oh, you know what? I've got to find a way to solve this without going to the property. Mm-hmm. Got a way to find a way to solve this. We're now taking all electronic payments. There's no checks. There's no cash being dropped off. Like, this is the way we do business. That's, in fact, a very freeing thing to get in place, I think, once you've done that. Tell me about your self-publishing journey. I know you've written the book, and I know I read the title out here, and we kicked this off, and I can't remember what it was now. But tell me about the title of that book and then tell me about what's in the book and why you wrote it.
Yeah. So one of the great things about passive income is that you don't have to own rental property to create passive income. And so a lot of the things that I hear from people is like, well, I don't want to be a landlord, Rachel. I want to create passive income, but I don't want to be a landlord. And the great thing is you don't have to be a landlord to generate passive income. There's a lot of other ways to do it besides investing in real estate. I have found self-publishing to be an amazing way to generate passive income. So in 2017, I self-published my first book, Money Honey. And it was this thing I did because I used to be a financial advisor. All my family and friends came to me for financial advice, which I loved. At the same time, I thought, well, why aren't they learning on their own? You know, why aren't they reading books, listening to podcasts? And I had this aha moment where I realized, oh yeah, personal finance is boring, right? It's overwhelming. It's complicated. It's intimidating. For most people, no wonder people don't like to learn about it.
Right.
So I thought to myself, how can I make this topic sassy and fun and simple? And that's where the idea for Money Honey came from. So I wrote it. I was really excited, something I felt very compelled to do. I didn't really think I was going to make money, to be honest. I was so hesitant to invest in it. So I spent like $560 on the book launch thinking I would never make that money back. It was just a passion project, but I published it in September 2017. And to my surprise, to this day, it just took off. It resonated with female millennials. It started selling, spread by word of mouth. I was making $1,000 a month in profit for the first year. And I launched another book. And last year, I believe I made about $99,600 or something in profit from my two books. I was like so close to becoming a six-figure author, but it's still really amazing to think, you know, these books now bring in anywhere from $4,000 to $10,000 a month in passive profit. And it's just an example of, you know, you don't have to invest in real estate to create passive income streams.
Right. No, that's absolutely true. I mean, it can be books, it can be other businesses, it can be, you know, a variety of things that you do. Tell me on, since we're talking about the money side of things, I know you said you're making about 20,000 bucks a month off your rental property. Off of 38 units, that's a over 500 bucks per month profit per unit.
Yeah. And it's not, that's including all of my passive income streams.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So at one point when we had 38 units, we were making 10 grand a month from those 38 units. So it was about $260 per door.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say that sounds pretty incredible.
Yeah.
About 500 bucks a door in net profit every single month. So that's really, really awesome. Now you're a limited partner in 8 syndications. Why are you going this direction and not buying more active real estate?
So great question. Real estate investing for my husband and I was always a means to an end. We never wanted to build this huge empire. And our goal was to get to 10K a month in profit from our rentals. And once we did that, we wanted to stop. That was sort of our fat fire number. We could become financially independent and not have to work anymore once we got to that number. So in 2018, we achieved that and we stopped acquiring real estate. And it shocked some people. You know, they were like, well, why not build an empire of 200 doors or 250 doors? And we were like, well, that's not what we want to do.
Right.
So we stopped, and I'm proud that we were able to do that, because you can really get caught up in, you know, enough is never enough and sort of always moving that goalpost further. But we were able to stop and be intentional about what we wanted to do with real estate. So that was why we stopped acquiring. Now, why we've transitioned things is because the goal is to always make the income streams more and more passive. And back then, when we were building up this empire, we had a lot more time than money. We started off pretty broke, in my opinion. Again, we didn't have, like, I wasn't a trust fund baby. I wasn't making six figures. We were just scraping the money together to get 20% down payments.
Right.
But we did have time, and we were willing to hustle to make cash flow. Now that we have a lot more money, we would rather invest in syndications, which are a lot more passive. So last year, we sold 3 of our big multifamily buildings, and we've transitioned that money into syndications. And it's a much more passive way to directly own and invest in real estate. So that's why we've sort of changed strategies.
Gotcha. Let's talk about what you are investing in right now. Are there certain asset classes you're favoring? Where do you see opportunity as a passive investor?
So I favor multifamily just because I'm so familiar with it and I can easily analyze those syndications. So that's my comfort. However, I really want to invest more in self-storage and mobile home parks, because I think there's a supply demand thing with self-storage right now, and definitely with mobile home parks, because it's a scarcity thing. It's a limited resource and there's only so many, and you're not allowed to build any more mobile home parks. So I'm really wanting to invest in more mobile home parks.
Right. We obviously talk about mobile home parks, you know, commonly on this show, and you've hit a lot of the highlights that kind of go into why that's still a great asset class. A great asset class to be involved in. How have you gone about picking the sponsors that you are working with?
Great question, because picking the sponsor is almost more important than picking which syndication you're investing in. Because really, when you're deciding to invest in a syndication, you're placing your money with the person. You are trusting the person, and you need to find somebody that has enough knowledge, who's done this before successfully, who has the experience, and who's trustworthy. I've heard horror stories of syndicators running off with, you know, 50K of somebody's money. And yeah, they'll eventually get caught and get thrown in jail, but someone's not going to get their money back. So you definitely want to find good, trustworthy people. I was making the mistake at first of trying to go on Facebook groups and LinkedIn and reaching out to people. But the problem with cold contacting somebody is that no one can speak for them. No one can vouch for them for me. So the best way, in my opinion, to find good sponsors or syndicators is to be connected to them through a mutual contact or friend who knows them and trusts them and has already invested with them.
Right.
So that is what I now do. I have a good network. And a book that I really recommend is The Hands-Off Investor by Brian Burke. It is so good. It's very dry. It's very technical, even for me, and I'm a finance nerd. But it's something, if you read it, like, have everything you need to know to screen syndicators and to do due diligence on a syndication.
Right. That, yeah, I think I've read that book before. It's been a while, but I'll put that back on the list and we'll certainly make sure we reference that. And also the Hold book by Steve, I think he says Chater.
Chater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll reference both of those there in the show notes. Questions for you. You said earlier when you guys had hit your number that you said, hey, we need 38 units, X number of dollars in passive income, and we want to grow no bigger. That's not what we want to do, is go bigger. What did you want to do instead?
We wanted to just live a free lifestyle. We wanted to work when, where, and if we want. A lot of people will get bothered by my use of the word retire because I still work. I still work on my business. I teach women how to invest in real estate. I have books. I have courses. I have programs. But the thing is, I work now because I want to, not because I have to. And we now spend a lot of our time hiking and traveling, and we have free time. And we work, again, because we have the choice to work, and that's because we want to do. So it's about having the time to do what is fulfilling to us and not have to trade our time for money anymore.
Right. Absolutely. So what does the next 5 to 10 years look like for you? Because let's presume, I mean, at some point, forgive me for my projection, you might be like, I hate this guy. You know, at some point, you know, the book sales may drop off, that income stream may dissipate. And then if you're doing courses or some other stuff along the way, do you just keep building some other things that are generating passive income along the way? Is that really the plan? Or is there something there that you guys are shooting big for?
I have a lot of ideas. I have a lot of ideas and not enough time to implement them all. But one thing I know about myself is if I'm not building and creating something, I'm bored. So I don't see myself ever stopping or slowing down from that regard. I want to make an impact, and I want to make a big impact and help as many people as I can. That's what I'm passionate about, especially helping women. So I want to write more books. That's for sure. One of my dreams is to write a fiction book, actually. I've thought about becoming a general partner and being a syndicator myself, or helping to raise capital. So that's a thought that I have. I definitely want to continue finding ways to invest in real estate, maybe as a silent partner, hard money lender, just continue to find ways to just do more things and challenge myself.
Got it. I love that. I think that's the fun part about it. And I really appreciate how you guys have defined what it is that you want. I think a lot of people, you know, they keep doing, like you said, they keep adding on, they keep moving the goalposts because they see, well, that guy has $1 billion in assets under management. Why shouldn't I? Like, you know, why shouldn't I go out and do this or do that? But in the end, if it's not what it is that it serves you or the people around you, it's probably not that fulfilling. So you got to do what it is that's in your heart and in your goal list of things to do. So I really admire you and your husband's ability to set limits on it and say, this is what we're building, and then we're done, at least with the real estate, you know, portfolio part of it. Obviously, like you said, you're either building or you're bored. So you're always going to be building something.
I think that's my new tagline. I like that. I'm either building or I'm bored.
You said it, not me. I wrote it right here. Building or be bored. I said, yeah, building or you're bored. So that's really, really cool. Rachel, I've certainly enjoyed this. Thank you for taking the time really to come on today and share with us your story and what you have done, are doing in real estate, publishing, and everything else. I think it's a really cool story and certainly inspiring to the rest of us. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, thank you, Sam. You all can follow me on Instagram at MoneyHoneyRachel. And what I'd love to do for your listeners is, if anyone wants to download my passive income starter kit, I will give that for free. So they can go to moneyhoneyrachel.com/passive-income to download that.
Awesome. And we'll make sure, of course, that we put that also in the show notes. Rachel, perfect. Thank you again. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.